Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified with your host, Eric Taylor, myself, Shiva Maharaj. And today we have James McQuiggan. I hope I said that correctly, sir.
You got it.
Of KnowBefore. How's it going?
It's going well. How about yourselves?
I can't complain.
As we like to say, it's another day in paradise.
Or in my world, it's another day that ends in Y.
Another day that ends in Y.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So James, to kick it off, do you want to give us a little background on yourself and KnowBefore and how you two came together?
Oh, wow. How long do we have? This is a fun story. I love it. I do enjoy telling this story.
You know, I got as much time as you do.
Oh, there you go. I hope. So, ironically, it all started, you know, I think a lot of us in this industry, you know, back in high school, we got into computers. I mean, for me, computers was, you know, the 80s, the Commodore VIC-20, the PET computer, learning Turbo Pascal. But ironically, when I left high school, it was a theater. I was very much into theater technical. They were go into computers, and computers was all programming. And I was like, meh. So I went into theater. Well, I did that for about 6 years, 7 years. And it was fun, but I needed a career that was going to be a little more stable, a little more, not late nights and crazy weekends, and had a little more money in it. So, got into computers. I spent 18 years working at Siemens, did all kinds of, just this little German company, you know, you might've heard of it. But I was part of our energy division, with a particular group where we did the monitoring of the large gas turbines that are usually out in the middle of nowhere, providing power for cities. The monitoring system that we had came out of Germany, but I handled all the networking aspects of it and basically taught myself how to configure Cisco routers and firewalls. And back in the day of PIX firewalls, if folks remember those, got into ASAs but literally just taught myself how to configure it and had a lot of fun with it and securing it. And then I ended up having an audit done internally by our security team. And, they ended up coming with me to one of our plants, and one of the mornings we were having breakfast, they're like, you know, you should look at getting your CISSP if you're really interested into security. And I'm like, the CI what? So that was 2008. I took it, I failed it. I was ticked. I turned around, took the boot camp again and passed it that time. And ever since then, it's just been a roller coaster ride of a lot of fun. Collaborate a lot with IAC Squared. I run the Central Florida chapter here. Now I'm also a college professor teaching cybersecurity. It's the cyber ops course from Cisco. So it's kind of blue teaming, which is a lot of fun. And eventually after about 18 years, my time at Siemens, I hate to say that it was coming to an end, but I was always looking, you know, we're always looking for the next big thing. And, I had a couple friends, our colleagues, Eric and Javad, that were already working at KnowBefore. And we were texting one day and they were like, so do you think you'd want to be a security evangelist? And I'm like, I want to be a security evangelist. The role is fantastic. Giving presentations and educating and talking to people. Sure. So, I had a meeting with the vice president of public relations with Kathy. And, from there, she's like, yeah, when can you start? So, I've been there now all coming up on 2 years, and, it's been great. Of course, you know, 6 months in, COVID hits, and now we're working from home. We're doing all of our presentations remotely. And so for me, I ended up getting a decent setup here in my office, nice ring lights, some other video lights, some good microphones. I figure, you know, I got to at least try to look good and sound good, when presenting the information to everybody. And, but it's been a lot of fun. I've started now to get back out and do some traveling in person to some conferences. Did one in May and June. I got a couple more coming up next month in October, November. So hopefully the Delta variant doesn't like kill us or end up canceling a lot of the in-person events. So we'll see what happens. We're going to KnowBefore, best job ever, you know, being able to comment, being able to communicate and educate and meet so many people, all different industries and aspects, and just educate, and bringing that awareness to everybody, which is a lot of fun. So, but KnowBefore itself is now, we're in our 11th year, provide security awareness and training to organizations, small, medium, enterprise, global businesses, and not make it so that it's just a boring click, 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 next, you know, next, 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 take the test. Okay, woo, we're good. It's designed to be engaging, interactive, and the program we put forth is a little more than just the one-time training. It's going through and doing the phishing assessments. And then also we have a huge store of all kinds of additional training videos for all different departments, divisions that you might have in your organization, whether it's your finance, your HR folks, developers, different industries, finance, industrial control systems. So all kinds of different additional videos. But one of the coolest thing that KnowBe4 does, that I was impressed with was a series they came out with called The Inside Man. And it's like a Netflix series. And it's ironically, the first season is on Amazon Prime. And the series is about a guy that tries to breaks into an organization to steal data. And it's all about story first. And each episode's about 8 minutes and there's 10 of them. And as you watch it, the idea is the user is sitting there going, oh, why did they let him in? He shouldn't be allowed to walk in the door that easily or get a badge that easily. So it just reinforces what people would have learned in the security training. We've done 3 seasons and we're working on the 4th one right now for that. And I know it's successful because I have friends of mine that call me up going, can you give me the inside scoop on what's happening next with Inside Man? I'm like, nope, sworn to secrecy. Can't tell you. Sorry. So a lot of good things with KnowBe4, a lot of things we got going on, and just excited to be a part of the family and helping spread the word.
Very cool. So how exactly do you guys provide your training? Are we talking emails going in to the user, asking them to click on something?
So the security awareness training, it's service-based, security awareness as a service. It's on the cloud. But the phishing assessments that get done is actually run by somebody in the organization. So we provide the service, you have somebody that's dedicated to doing those phishing assessments. And there's different levels. You know, have like 1-star, 2-star, 5-star. So your 1-star ones are going to be your clear text, probably misspellings in it. With something related to, you know, something in IT or something that could be with a cloud storage or something where the person might end up clicking on it. But then you can get more targeted with the different phishing emails. It's got to be whitelisted. So the organization has to whitelist the IPs that's coming in where we're coming from. What's that?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
That is one of the banes of my existence of every single platform out there.
Yep. You gotta let us in, right? You gotta let us in, because there isn't, unfortunately, an on-prem system for it.
So why not for the Microsoft 365 crowd? I don't care about Google because I don't use them, so they don't count in my mind, right?
All right, well, there you go.
They can burn.
Sure.
Why not use the Graph API to send the email? So you're authorizing an OAuth application, or you're authorizing via the API to send these emails. And I'll tell you why I dislike SMTP-based email for phish threats. There are very few vendors in this space out there who remember to renew all of their domains. And when they don't renew them and Joe Schmo China, Russia, or anyone else gets them, that's a whitelisted vector coming in.
Yeah. No, you certainly bring up a good point. Now, with regards to the Graph API, that's a little outside of my scope, but I can certainly get an answer for you. Our main developer on speed dial, so a quick question to him, I could probably get an answer. You're right. I mean, we've seen it in the past where you've had organizations that let their domains go. I mean, heck, it happened to Microsoft. I remember years ago.
Last year.
Last summer? Yeah. I can even think back. I thought it happened years ago.
It happens at least once a year to most of the major vendors. And
somebody is forgetting that. Yeah.
People are fallible, right? It's not, can't be 100% all the time. And I get that, but just for, I guess, your edification or your senior technical guy, the ability to do this was made available publicly by the Graph API last summer. So maybe it's something you guys could take a look at, but sorry, not to get you off track.
No, it's, No, it's all good. And I know our guy, the team that we have, they're on top of all the technology and everything that's going on. We've got those dedicated developers for that. Haven't met them personally, but I do know that they're there. And, but yeah, always looking at, you know, what's the latest different phishing attacks? What are the latest technology that's being used and trying to, and not trying, actually putting that into the product and the service as well. So that, you know, we can try and keep, we're keeping up with the latest so that folks, can get that experience and, have that awareness. Cause for me, if you have an understanding and you have that awareness of what the dangers are, then you can take the proper steps. Now you may think and look at it, go, nah, it's never going to happen to me. You know about it just because I'm aware doesn't mean I care, but they may know about it and go, nah, that couldn't happen to us. And then when it happens to them, then they're scrambling going, oh, okay, now I got to fix this.
How has your business, meaning KnowBe4, changed with the advent of groups like, Eric, is it Conti or Lockbit that's looking for the insider threats?
Lockbit
2.0, the ransomware group.
Yeah.
They are actively recruiting insider threats from companies to get in. And then you also have the wonderful T-Mobile breach that I saw you posted a article about this morning. And listen, I think these breaches will continue to happen. Mm-hmm. They'll never stop. And it is what it is, right? So just suck it up, buttercup, and get used to it. That's my take on it.
It's a fact of life.
But where I see this affecting KnowBe4 is now you're going to have even better targeted phishing attacks because of the data that's being leaked in these breaches. So how do you guys, I guess, counter any of that when it comes to the insider threats and the T-Mobile targeted phishing with your platform?
Yeah. So when we're looking at spear phishing, you have the ability to craft your own type of phishing emails or spear phishing emails that you want within the platform. I know that because I did that with my students. I've actually gone through and phished my students over the years, as well, so that I can craft specific ones. And, you know, when they think, oh yeah, look, we can spot them all, they're not going to get us. So I create some really specific ones, based on information that's out there. But yeah, when we started looking at the insider threat, I mean, Lockbit. Who cares who they are? But anyway, going in and on the insider threat. I mean, we saw that happen with Tesla, right? Where somebody actually physically approached him and was going to give him money if you put in the flash drive and, you know, steal the data for us. But, you know, I remember seeing that article and, you know, what they're trying to do. Part of me is, you know, if I got that email, I'm thinking, my initial response is, well, how do I know you're going to pay me? Yeah, so I get it, but how do I know you're not just going to leave me up to dry? Now, it can go back to the original ransomware issue of when they first started hitting everybody with ransomware. If you paid and didn't get the key, then that ruins their business model. So, because then otherwise people would just ignore them and go, well, look, okay, you encrypted us, but even if we give you the money, you're not going to give us the key, then forget it. We're not going to pay you. So I have to imagine that they're going to offer up some money up front. You know, if you think about it as a business model, you know, you've got to give a little to get what you're going to be wanting, that particular data. So you give them a couple hundred bucks and go, all right, here, now launch it. But I have to imagine that through, you know, you can do the spear phishing and make sure they're not going to fall for those kind of things. Cause you know, if you did have that email put up there and you know who clicks on what emails and you have somebody that decides to, you send one of those crafted emails and you get somebody in your organization that clicks on it, you then now might have an HR issue because you've got somebody that potentially has demonstrated that they want to do harm to the organization. So what kind of HR, what kind of legal issues now? Does this become considered entrapment? So those are certainly some things that could come out of it. Now, from a, you know, from KnowBe4's perspective, you know, we're going to provide, it's kind of like what we did with COVID last year. There was a big uproar last year with phishing companies saying, no, we're not going to create any type of COVID phishing email. We don't want, you know, it's bad enough with everything going on. We don't want to try and trick you. It was like that with the train company in the UK. You've had the Chicago, one of the Chicago newspapers. where they trick their employees with a phishing email regarding money after they laid off people.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially saying, hey, we've got a surplus of cash. Everyone's going to get a big bonus. Click on the link to see if you get it. And a bunch of people did, and they got upset. And that's kind of gauging your culture, you know, looking at the culture of your organization and trying to determine, okay, are our people going to be liking this? Is this going to be something that they're not going to like? And kind of having that, you know, your finger on the pulse of the community and, you know, but making the emails available is kind of what the service that we're providing that Noble4 has, versus, you know, us putting it out there and go, hey, everybody, great, go ahead and trick all your employees and see who you can get that wants to do damage to the organization. That's not the intent, but that could be an outcome of that, a side result of that. So that could be interesting to see what ends up happening, especially with what LockBit is doing.
And have you guys had any of your, without getting to personal, well, corporate data, have you had many of your clients start that testing for the insider threats?
I don't know. I'm not okay. Sure. I don't think we go and look at everybody's. We provide the service. Here's the platform. If they have, it isn't something that I've heard yet.
So do you guys have access to Eric, go ahead.
So just to talk about it on that before, because I know where show's getting ready to go and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole without asking this one first, but as a penetration tester, a lot of times we get, you know, we save a lot of the custom emails that get sent to us and that we capture, you know, craft our own, you know, ad hoc, you know, FedEx, UPS,
right,
Dropbox, whatever. So does your system only support your templates, or does it allow people like me that want to use a platform for training to, you know, add our own custom templates, if you will, custom emails to the system? Maybe I'll send that out.
So excellent. I love that question because yes, is the easy answer. Yes, you can craft your own. You can create your own. There's even a new feature that we created and released this year, cheesy plug, but Fish Flip, where if you get an actual phishing email that comes in and it gets reported, we can take that phishing email and basically import it into the system, flip it around, remove the links, create our own, add our own to it, and send that out. So what somebody else may have, you know, so now we're taking their technology or their phishing emails, the latest ones, and flipping it back. And being able to use that as a test case for us. But yes, you can certainly craft your own, create your own style. I mean, we've got thousands upon thousands of variations and different styles and formats for different industries, but you can go through and create your own. And you can also, like I said, if you get the, if you get one that comes in, you can then repurpose it and send it back out. If you get a phishing email that comes in within the organization, and it's been sent to everybody, there's a, what we call the fish rip, where you can identify that and it'll go into everybody else's mailbox and pull that out of their mailbox. So now you reduce the risk of further attack by somebody else clicking on that phishing link of a real phishing email that's come into the organization.
Now, in terms of your platform, is it SaaS or is it on-premise? Or both.
SaaS. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What level of access does Noble4 as a company have to the customer data inside?
Good question. That I don't have a direct answer. I'd have to get an answer for you. I'm not fully aware. I know that what we collect is an email address and a name, because when we personalize the email addresses, we tweak that. The data that gets collected is going to be people that click on the link. You can add more information. You want to add department information. You can add phone numbers. But usually what we do see, and I know from my own experience, is we get a name, we get a first name, last name, we get an email address. And that's what's in the system.
Okay.
And because we got to be able to send them out. But the data that gets collected is going to be the analysis data, the results of who clicked on the link and how long it took and which emails it was and so forth.
The reason I ask is because I am also afraid of insider threats at my vendors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say you have one bad Apple employee in there who is able to exfiltrate data, sell it to some bad actor, or a platform like KnowBe4, which is not unlike any other vendor out there. So I don't want to pigeonhole KnowBe4 into this, but we're whitelisting emails coming from your platform into us or our clients. A bad actor who has infiltrated your company can potentially send a lethal link in to get persistence. And again, this can happen with any vendor. So I am more leaning towards the stance of having a zero knowledge architecture with my vendors, so they can have the least amount of insight into my clients. And I guess it's more about your employees or vendors' employees having access to those email addresses. Like, yes, the system should know it because you need it and you can't get around it, but maybe not having vendor employees able to access any of that data.
The only the data that gets inputted is what you as our customer feels comfortable sharing with us. So while there is first name, last name, email address that's going to be inputted, that's where that whatever is provided is whatever is stored. Now, how that's stored and the protections that go around it, that I don't have, I'm not involved in that capacity and can't really answer on that. But I do know that the security teams that we've got and the people that are working on it are fully aware of the different attack methods. I mean, the training program is called Kevin Mitnick Security Awareness Training, the hacker himself from the 90s. So we know that we're looking at all the different attack vectors, or, you know, from my perspective, you know, having Kevin, he's always, you know, he's got to be looking at, all right, how do I get in? And so I know that we've been looking at those and making sure that those have been taken care of. So, but you're right. Insider threat is always, in any organization, is always a big concern, and making sure you're, you know, you got least privilege, you're restricting access, you're monitoring access, you know, what kind of data is getting copied out, what kind of, and so forth, and being able to monitor that. So, but yeah, no, so,
good point.
So when you say that you're, what information they're willing to share with us, does that mean that anybody in KnowBe4 or certain people inside of KnowBe4 can see inside of our tenant with or without our knowledge or without our knowledge?
It is not, to my understanding, from what I've been told, because it's the sales folks that, and our customer service managers that are going to be working with the different clients and working with the information. To my understanding, it is not the practice, and it is not recommended that we go into those systems. If they're asking us, then we can go in and provide support. But one of the new features that's been, has been set up in there is for the admin consoles, you can block out, you can control who can look at the data and look at the systems. So if you want to lock out KnowBe4, you can lock out KnowBe4. And then if you need us to come in and look at something, then you can provide, provide the access. But, by practice and by our policies, they're not going in and looking at that and being able to, you know, go hit the master database or whatever it may be.
I think you guys should lead with that, because not many vendors out there outside of the FedRAMP space offer that ability to lock the vendor out. But hey, what do I know? I'm just an IT guy, right?
We're just IT folks. Yeah.
Because I mean, when we take a look at, you know, even name, email address, and maybe even address, you know, which is basic stuff that you can do a Google search on, right? But
yeah,
even folks who tie into the Amazon APIs, because we have a couple of clients that do that, they are heavily scrutinizing them and classifying even a name and email address as pure PII, and want them to lock down their systems with like almost like a CMC level 3. Like that's where we're getting to with this. And I get the point of securing networks and potentially, you know, making sure people can't just start cross-referencing and doing multiple data dumps, reconciliation and things like that. Cause you know, you got T-Mobile that, you know, has happened, you have Experian that's happened. So a lot of our data is potentially already out there. So, you know, you get a vendor that's shipping out through Amazon, you may have shipped through, you know, there's at some point in time, which there may already be, but you know, can you know, all it just takes somebody is to start aggregating all this daggum data and they have a full profile on you, mm-hmm. right? I mean, yep. It's almost like a free will of the NSA and the public sector.
Well, in T-Mobile's defense, or in every vendor's defense, T-Mobile just made it easier for everyone. And Experian, let's be honest here. T-Mobile may be large, but it's not as big as the Experian one was, which I think was almost 300 million for records. Yeah.
You're looking at all different industries. The cyber criminals are going after car dealerships because of all the drive. You can get all kinds of driver's license information. Because you think about when you go into a car dealership, the amount of data they collect on you there. If you are, and I know that's here in Florida, if you're applying for financial aid for your kids going to college, the amount of information you have to provide them is crazy.
Yeah.
A lot more than what I had to provide more information when I was applying for my kids' financial aid for a loan of maybe $20,000 to $30,000 over so many years. When I went and got my mortgage for my house, I didn't have to give up that much information. You talk about it. I mean, I know they've been targeted, but you talk about a target as you go after those databases that are managed by the government. You know, heck, we had the Census Bureau got hit this week.
What about the watch list with two million people on it?
Yeah.
The no fly.
Yeah. That watch list, the Bureau. So, you know, you've got all that information that's out there. It goes back, you know, in trying to live the life of extreme privacy, gets extremely difficult and very challenging.
Is it even possible anymore?
No, because I see this is what this is where I was going to lead to. As you know, I talked to you a little bit offline about this with Shiva, but we got dropped in from another colleague of mine about a court record system based in North Carolina that is just about insecure. So apparently, courthouse systems all across the country and legal firms that are doing businesses and want to exchange legal documentation through a platform is using this platform.
Mm-hmm.
So I started poking into it because he's like, these guys are just insecure. And I'm like, yeah, did you realize that Type VNC is open to the public on two of their databases?
Thanks.
And I'm just like, you know, you're submitting all this information. Who is actually effing auditing these companies? You know, and it's one of those things that I may have to go public on. We're trying to do it the right way. Naturally, we're trying to do proper disclosure. We're trying to say, hey,
right,
you guys really have some freaking problems over here. But I am half afraid that within the next week or 2 weeks, we're going to be making a big freaking stink all over social media. And there's probably going to be some jobs affected, unfortunately, because of it. I hate to do it, but
nobody cares. What else
are we supposed to do?
Right. Nope. Those organizations with the VNC open, is there any signs or any info that they have been breached? Cause I know that's where they're going to come from. It's like, well, we haven't been hacked yet. No one's gotten in.
Found out yet.
So here's the problem. So I did some searching. Yeah. I did some searching and I stood up a Type VNC and I started brute forcing my own Type VNC up in Azure.
Okay.
I did not know until I did this. So maybe this is just some of the latest versions, but it actually logs those failed login attempts into Windows event logs.
Okay.
So they have to, unless they're just not monitoring.
Or they're just not monitoring it. And that could be entirely possible as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because until something happens is when, from my experience and what I've seen is when something happens, that's when upper management, C-suite go, okay, all right, well, we got to fix this. We got to take care of it. And not realizing that it could have been fixed sooner because that's the risk they took on, knowing that, yeah, there are these problems and issues, but we can't worry about that right now. We got to worry about other things. We haven't been hacked yet. We'll just keep moving. And as IT people, as security people, that we're kind of like freaking out and going, no, you've got to do something. And they take on a lot more risk than what we think they're comfortable taking. And they take it and keep going.
Now, this is part of the problem that I think that a lot of MSPs are, and this is kind of what me and Shiva beat up a lot of people on, unfortunately, is the fact that the MSPs, or quote unquote technologists, if you will, they're not willing to ask these questions. You know, if you are a zero knowledge, zero trust, are you FedRAMP? Do you offer, do you have anything, this stuff on your roadmap? And making educated assumptions around the security of your vendor and the roadmap and making sure you feel comfortable putting your data, your customer data, interacting with it, you know, cause there's vendors out there that will tie into your 365 tenant at the CSP level that want full admin rights. So I'm like, no. And people just blindly accept it. I went on a pen test about 3 weeks ago and crafted a Microsoft app and sent it out saying, you know, we need access for this app through some bogus company that I created. And six of the admins freaking gave me full admin. I'm like, oh my God, did you not even read the permissions?
You know, speaking of permissions, what type of permissions does KnowBe4 require, or is it limited to the whitelisting of VIPs?
Permissions in the sense of access.
Yeah. So when
networks,
or let's say I wanted to start using KnowBe4.
Yeah.
What type of access or permissions do I need to give the platform, or is it just the whitelisting of the data? Are you syncing with the Azure AD user list to pull the users in?
Good question. Now we're getting down into the weeds that is outside of my, it's outside of what I do. But I can, you know, it's certainly something I can find out and set you up with a conversation with someone if need be. Our sales folks, I know, have a lot more info on that. I'm just the advocate out there promoting on security awareness, but getting into the nitty gritty details, I don't have a lot. I don't have as much that in depth, but could certainly set up a conversation.
Now, I know you guys are FedRAMPed.
Yes.
Moderate, I think it is.
Sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, we'll
FedRAMP.
Go with that.
So we'll sure. Go with FedRAMP.
I know we're involved. I know we've got the FedRAMP program, CMC. Oh, that's one of the products. Never mind. Sorry. Go on.
I'm going to come back to that CMMC dumpster fire. Do you have an on-prem version of your platform?
We use the same services as everybody else does. We get phished. We are all of our employees, all the employees.
Oh, no, phished. Sorry. I meant you. KnowBe4, as far as I know, is a SaaS platform.
Right.
Do you have an on-prem version that I can lease, buy, whatever from you guys?
Oh,
where?
No, it's all SaaS. It's all cloud-based.
Okay. So tell me about the CMMC dumpster fire that everyone in the channel is going for. And before you get into it, I don't know if you saw yesterday or the day before, Homeland Security said they want to mirror a compliancy along the lines of CMMC. To me, I think just make one and be done, but that would make too much sense. But anyway, what are you guys doing with CMMC?
When I said CMMC, there's a product that we have. It's our GRC tool. It's called the KnowBe4 Compliance KnowBe4 Compliance Monitor. And it has capability within it to provide CMMC level one. They're working on the other levels within that platform, but that's just one of the other, that's one of the products that we have to help with GRC for organizations. It's got a built-in risk register, vendor management, policy management, and there's a compliant management function.
So that platform, this is the one thing that really tweaks me. I'm getting to be a little bit further away from Shiva's stance on CMMC, because I do think at least it's some sort of governing body. I don't think a lot of MSPs by any means are going to go through the CMMC.
Right.
Well, it's military. So,
it's all the government. Yeah.
It's
not DOD even government. It's only DOD. It's not even the civilian side of the government.
Exactly. But, you know, if you listen to some of the people that are out there freaking toting this thing, it's like, oh, all MSPs must follow CMMC. No, F-tard, stop your crap.
Right.
You know, looking at UConnect wise.
Kaseya.
Yeah. But, sorry, I just called out the bullshit where it is. But anyway, so, and completely lost my train of thought when I go off of that. But, you know, so I think I'm getting to the point where at least there needs to be a potential CMMC for the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a stripped down auditing process, because a lot of MSPs are not going to spend the $10,000 to $20,000 or $30,000.
It's 150 to 300.
Well, I've heard that, but I've also heard that that is a very high end number for those who don't have their shit together. That a lot of the folks who actually have all their documentation, have everything ready to go for a C-3PO, the thing always makes me think of Star Wars. yeah, that it could be a lot less because they have to spend a lot less time in the assessment.
Yeah.
The thing that really irks me, now I remember, the thing that really irks me about this is with any of these systems, and hopefully maybe you've or you guys have already thought of this, but you know, when you take a control, you know, let's just say logging, because we touched on that several times. Are you giving the option for the MSP, the partner that you have, to start saying, okay, what is your RMM? What is your PSA? What are your firewalls? What is this? What is that? And saying, okay, is your logging applicable to all of these things? How is your logging being aggregated by all these things? Because I can easily say, yeah, I've got logging because I got Microsoft 365, but I'm not logging shit with my firewall. Right. I'm not looking at any of that. So there's so many doors open. I'm like, okay, we mentioned one thing and now we're compliant. No.
Just accept the risk and move on. That'll make you compliant.
Oh, don't give me a good start on Overwatch.
I mean, it's true, right? If you can identify the risk and you can accept it.
Yep.
You've planned for it.
Yep.
But that's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other risk management discussion right there.
Just before we get away, is know before having those conversations with your partners when going through that, helping them go through that assessment? Like, are they listing out? Are you guys helping them know that, hey, y'all need to list out all these things that you guys are integrating with and how it applies to this control module?
I don't have an answer because I'm not sure how those discussions go with regards to the MSPs or the partners or whatever. I just know based off the platform with the modules and what it can provide. But with regards to specifics, I don't have that particular information.
All right. So I got a request then, because me and Shiva are bringing up a couple of good things for you. When y'all implement it, please put on there recommended by two idiots. Please.
Meaning Eric and I.
It's
the two idiot module.
With the compliance module, you can bring in any type of compliance. You can bring in NERTSIP, you can bring in IEC 62443, you can bring in ISO, you can bring in whatever compliance module. And then you can even, if you've got one that's not in there it's already preformed, you can create your own. So it's more or less the structure of the application for you to bring in your own compliance, not the actual, here's the compliance you will use. It's, you can bring whatever compliance module you want, HIPAA or whatever industry, NERCSIP. So
I came out of
the NERCSIP world, coming into know before and dealing with compliance and everything else. And after looking and using the tool, I was like, damn, I wish I had this back when I was doing NERCSIP. It would have made it a lot easier just in the sense of storing evidence, you know, depending on whatever the compliance is, but storing evidence, assigning tasks, following up on that. Yeah. It's more of the tool, not exactly the compliance itself.
So here's a hypothetical, because me and Shiva, or Shiva and I guess is proper English, have a colleague that found a patch that you would do for like Boy Scouts or the military or whatever. And it had a picture of a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to sign up for not NOBA Force compliancy. I'm going to create a fucking dumpster fire compliancy brought to you by NOBA Force, and we're going to go stupid.
And we're going to give it out to partners. But, getting back to NOBA Force, what do you guys have coming that would be exciting that is a development right now? Because I can't imagine you guys are a company that likes to stay static.
We're created everything, we're done, we're good, we're moving on. I know what's out there currently, but what's coming up, I don't have the insight to that. They don't give me that.
Come on
with that. So I don't have any, I know that they're always working on new stuff. We're always working on new content, always working on new templates, working on a new Inside Man. Season 4 is coming next year. There you go. But with regards to new stuff for the platform, I don't even find out until it almost gets announced practically. So,
okay, we got to do a petition now. First, we're going to do dumpster fire training. And now we got a petition to make sure James gets a seat at the table in some of these meetings.
The inside.
Oh, I don't want the knowledge. It's just, I got enough stuff I get to deal with on a regular basis. It's like, nope, I'm good.
So I know some people are listening here. How do people get involved with KnowBefore? What's the typical pricing structure? And we don't need to go into numbers, but more so, are you paying per user, per company?
Yeah, it's done based off users, you know, and then depending on how many you get, of course, just like any business model out there, it's a lower price, but that's all coordinated through our awesome sales folks that we have. You just basically went to the KnowBefore website and you can literally just start the whole process right there. We have incredible sales folks, and I'm saying that because I'm biased and I'm, pushing it, but
the advocate, right?
I'm the advocate. Yeah. I'm here promoting, out of the public relations office, promoting KnowBefore. But it's very easy to get the conversation going and started, and depending on the size of your organization, small, medium, global enterprise, whatever, we have, dedicated folks. And then once you're on board, then we have dedicated, customer service managers that are working with you, making sure, and I've gone through that experience because I had my own platform for my, my students. And if anytime I had a problem, I could drop an email and I got a response very quickly. It wasn't the next day, it was later on that day. If I need to have a phone call, I could have a phone call. I kind of sat there and went, okay, am I getting special privilege because I work here? In talking with other colleagues and friends of mine who are KnowBefore customers, they've said that, yeah, they make a phone call, they get called back very quickly, or somebody else is there to help, and email responses are quick. So, I know that the team is dedicated to making sure it all works properly for everybody out there. So,
and how do you guys do your training when you onboard a partner or a client?
We actually have an internal, dedicated team, called it KnowBefore University, where they go through, and it's several weeks. It's not something you get hired and the first day you're on the phones. It's going through a process of getting hired and then training and then educating, coaching, and then finally getting out on the sales floor. We're all working from home, so.
No, sorry, I meant for us as partners or clients.
Oh, as partners, sorry.
How does the training work there? What's the time frame? Let's say we say, James, it sounds great. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Sign me up. What's the process to get from that to deploying the training?
Are you talking about from an MSP or are you talking about as a customer?
Both.
As a customer,
because that's the one that really matters, right?
As a customer, I've heard stories where they signed up, they did the proof of concept the next day, and by the end of the week, they were up and running. They did the proof of concept, they loved it, and they were using the full-fledged. It's very, very quick. I know when I used it, once my account got created, which once it went through the process, once the PO comes in or whatever money needs to exchange hands, once the account gets created,
you guys are not doing this for free. How dare you? You don't want to be like every other vendor helping people, in air quotes, for those listening.
Well, we gotta feed our families, right? We gotta live. We're not doing this for free, right?
I'm not. I don't do anything for free. So I'm right there with you.
There you go. Once you're set up, once the account gets created, you're up and running, you import your users, it's a very quick turnaround time. At least for me, I know I was up and running and sending phishing emails within a couple of hours once I had my, my account got created. I was going somewhere with that and I lost my thought. It's all good.
It happens on the show.
Apparently. Yeah. But it is a very quick turnaround. There is some education provided, take you through, but the tool is very intuitive when you're going through and you're looking at the different, you know, how you import the users, you know, once you get them in there and then going through, picking the templates and the frequency and how off you're going to send it. Yeah. And there's training provided. You can get coaching from the KnowBeforce CSMs and everything else. So
what do you think would be the first training program a customer should run once they're up and running with you guys? Which is your favorite?
Certainly the Kevin Mitnick security awareness training. That's always, you know, that's kind of the baseline. It's kind of like what I do with my students. When we get in, I give them my intro to information security slide deck. I want everybody baseline. So when I talk about threats and risks and vulnerabilities, they all understand what I'm talking about. And so that's the Kevin Mitnick security awareness program. And we have one that's 45 minutes for regular users. And then for the busy, really busy, you know, folks, we have like a 15-minute version of it. And then after that, then you start getting into looking at the different training programs that are available based on either the type of role that you might have versus the industry that you're in. And you can stagger those out. You know, it's not something you take all at once. You want to kind of stagger it out throughout the year. You're doing the phishing assessments to go along with it as well, kind of supporting the training. You could have the inside man video being available for people to watch, which is great. Cause when you think about, you know, you do your department meetings, one way to kind of break up the monotony of a department meeting, hey, let's watch a video, you know, sounds corny and cheesy and, you know,
how is this ingested? Is there an app or is it just mobile friendly only on the computer?
It's all browser based, so you'll do it through your computer.
Okay. And is it formatted for mobile devices?
I don't know. I've never tried it on a mobile device.
All right. If you guys put that feature in place, name it after Eric and I, please.
I mean, I have no doubt you can access it through a mobile platform, but you know, there's a lot of information that shows up on that screen. So, like I said, if it's browser based, there's no dedicated app for it that I know of. So,
okay. Cool.
So what are you, I know you mentioned a couple of things that you got coming up, but what would you say in the next 6 months that you are doing as part of KnowBeforce that you're excited about and you'd like other MSPs to get involved with?
Or end customers.
Yeah.
So one of the things that my role is, and one of the things that we have within KnowBeforce is the speaking opportunities. You know, we are, there's me and there's six others that we are available to come and educate, not exactly provide education training, but come and talk to organizations regarding security awareness, security culture, insider threats, ransomware. That's my daily grind. It's working on presentations, collaborating with customers or new potential customers or people that aren't even customers and coming in doing presentations, if it's virtually or in person, focusing on security culture is kind of the big focus right now, especially, you know, everyone's doing secure. Well, we hope everybody's doing security awareness, but now it's,
they're not.
I know. I try to remain optimistic, but
how's it going to be optimistic when Microsoft says that only 13% of their client base is even using 2FA.
Yeah. Well, Twitter said 2.3 the other day I saw.
Yeah.
We're fucked. We're a long way off. But a lot of that comes from behaviors. It comes from your awareness and the culture, you know, being able to drive that or have that security culture in an organization, in a society. It's a long way off and it's what we're talking about. It's what we're discussing, how to come up with, how to create that culture, programs and best practices. It's early days where I've been seeing organizations have a strong security culture, incorporating it into, you know, users, performance program, their performance plan for a year. But you know, it's like I said, early days, but we're wanting to try and get more. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the end goal, is to have more or have those organizations have that strong security culture, have security top of mind, being aware of phishing emails, social engineering, insider threats, stronger coding practices, you know, all the important stuff.
That's not important. What are you talking about? Let the hackers in. Come on. keeps Eric in business as IR.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. I want to say thanks to James for joining us and being a special guest on this. We'll definitely have to have you come back as things are advanced than we know before and your security platform. If you are watching this on YouTube, please subscribe. If you're listening to this on the audio version, please follow and download. And please, 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 we would love it if you would share this content with somebody you think would be able to benefit from it. It would help us out so much in spreading the word. Until next time, thanks again.